Hello and welcome back to Self-Help Show. This is Gina Margaret Tiger and I am your host. Today, we are diving into the topic that so many people silently face. And this is how to take stock and rebuild your life amid a depressive state. There's so much that is going on in the world right now, and a lot of people are depressed, a lot of people are anxious. So again, if you remember, the show is Self-Help Show. We're kind of sharing information, discussing with experts and just general people like me and you and talking about these things. So today I have an amazing guest. I'm so excited to introduce him to you. My guest today is Brian Sachetta. I hope I got the name right.
You got it right.
He is a software developer, also turned into a mental health author and coach. He is the creator of Get Out of Your Mind, a platform that helps people overcome anxiety and depression through practical and relatable tools. So I'm going to hand it over to you, Brian, to introduce yourself in depth. Tell us everything about you. Over to you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Gina. As you said, right, I'm Brian Sachetta, owner and author of Get Out of Your Head, which is both a brand and book series that seeks to help folks overcome anxiety and depression. I do want to comment on my background a little bit, right? So folks may say, oh, he's a software developer. How did he get into the mental health space? That kind of thing. You know, like most folks who are listening to this, I've been through my own fair share of battles on the mental health front. And so kind of started in my late, like everybody's on a journey, if you will. There's ups and downs. And so I'd say over the last 15 or so years, what I really tried to do was say to myself, okay, I struggle with anxiety. I struggle with depression. And rather than just accept that at face value, I wanted to find ways to better my own condition in life. And so I went out, I read a ton of books. I went to therapy. I read a lot of journal articles. I talked to a lot of people, interviewed people, and just tried to figure out, like, what can I do to better my own lot in life? And eventually, I felt as though I had made some progress with both my anxiety and my depression, where I wanted to turn around and take the advice that I'd found for myself and give that to other people. You know, when you deal with mental health issues, it becomes, you know, they're obviously very painful, harrowing. And so you start to develop an understanding and a bit of empathy for other people who are going through this, because you know what it's like, right? And so having been through that stuff myself, when I talk to other people, when I interview other people, you know, I can see that, I can feel that pain. And the human in me just wants to help as much as possible, alleviate some of that pain, deal with that kind of pain. And so that's where my brand came from. That's where my books came from. And that's why I do shows like this one. So
amazing. Thank you so much for that thorough breakdown. And this is for you listeners, if you ever experiencing fog or you feel like you're stuck and you're just questioning your purpose and wondering how to start, this episode is your reminder that you are not alone. And here we are. I also started this because of mental health issues, and I had to kind of pick myself up from the brokenness and just the disaster and the damage that I found myself in because of what life can do to you. So, Brian, welcome to the Self-Help Show. It is an honor to have you here. And I'm excited about what we're going to uncover today.
Thanks, Gina. I'm also excited to be here. Should be a fun combo.
Awesome. So, I have a question. What do you think so many people misunderstand when it comes to depression? Because what I know is most people see it and they feel it's a weakness rather than a signal. So because of that, they kind of mask the symptoms until it kind of, you can't mask it anymore. So what do you think makes a lot of people misunderstand it?
Yeah, I think it kind of boils down to the myth that depression is just sadness, right? It's just this, hey, somebody's sad that something happened. And while that could be the case or part of the case, it's usually a lot more than that, right? So I try to give definitions that are simple and easy to understand. And I usually say that depression is a pervasive state of helplessness and hopelessness, right? It's when somebody has consciously or subconsciously said to themselves, nothing's going to get better. I don't know how it could get better, how it would get better. And even if I had any ability to change things in my life, I don't feel as though me changing those things would improve my condition. So it's really, you know, when you think of somebody who is depressed and you have that image in your mind of somebody who can't get out of bed, right? Sure, there's a physical component there, but it's also a very mental, spiritual, and emotional part too, right? Where They can't get out of bed because they don't see any reason to, right? There's no compelling future for them there. They feel as though anything that they do is not going to improve anything in their life. And so it becomes this overwhelming sadness, this overwhelming sense of hopelessness where it's not just, hey, my favorite sports team lost a game last night. It's a lot more existential than that. And I think that if people realize that a little bit more, maybe there'd be some more empathy, right? To think about, hey, what if I was in a state like that where I was so hopeless I couldn't get out of bed? Maybe I can't particularly, you know, maybe not every single person can envision that for themselves because they've never been there before, but they could look around and they could say, oh, if this hope that I had, if this agency as though I felt I had were gone, what would get me out of bed in the morning? You know, so I think that's an important thing to highlight, and it will help us go into further parts of the conversation when we think about, you know, where does that lack of agency come from? Where does that hopelessness come from? And then what helps us rebuild parts of our lives such that we can get some of that hope and agency back?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think also it's mostly our environment contributes to us staying in that loop. And then stuff like maybe your timelines on your devices, your social media and stuff like that. And it also becomes like a cycle where this is, for instance, a lot of people that are looking for employment, a lot of people that are looking for opportunities. Those are like some of the most depressed people in the world right now, because they don't have a source of income. They've probably tried applying and nothing seems to work. And maybe they are staying, even their living conditions are so uncomfortable. So for example, when somebody is in that, you know, depressive state where everything is kind of closing in, what's like a realistic way of, you know, taking stock of your life in that state without having judgment or without being overwhelmed?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think there's two parts to pull apart there. The first one being the judgment, lack of judgment piece, right? And I think that can only kind of come from conversations like this one and some experience in your own life, right? So when you talk to other people and they say, hey, I've also dealt with depression, or I went through a period of unemployment and it was really difficult. When you start to look at some statistics, whether they're official statistics or anecdotal evidence, like, you know, a podcast that you listen to, you start to become a little bit more compassionate for yourself. I think so, at least, where, for example, like the stats will show that 1 in 5 people across their lives will deal with some sort of depressive disorder. And so, you know, going from I'm dealing with depression, what's wrong with me? I must be some awful kind of person. I must be, you know, incapable of doing certain things in my life, or just not worthy of happiness or whatever. When you see a stat like that, I think it's hard not to then say to yourself, 1 in 5 people? I know a lot more than 5 people. I can look around and say, you know, if I have 5 good friends, if I have 5 family members, whatever, then of those 10, and maybe it's a lot more than that, but of those 10, 2 other people are going to deal with depression. Look at those folks and say, would you have the same reaction to them if they were dealing with depression as you were yourself, right? You care about those people, you love those people. You wouldn't look at them and say, you're lesser than, you are unworthy, you are, you know, there's something wrong with you, whatever. You would have love and compassion and hope for them. And so I think starting to see some of those, again, anecdotal stories and then some of the statistics helps you poke some holes in the belief that depression is, you know, it's wrong to go through depression. There's something wrong with you if you deal with depression. So I think that is like a foundational piece, right? To have that compassion and say, like, depression, it may not necessarily be part of everybody's life, but it is a relatively common thing for a good amount of people. And once you frame it from that lens, I think it's easier to say, okay, you know, maybe I got dealt not the best hand in the world. Maybe the 20% odds, maybe they hit me, right? And I was hoping that they wouldn't, but it's not like this was 1 in a million chance. This is a pretty common thing for a lot of people. Once you start to develop that lens, you know, there's a saying that comes up a lot from Buddhism and then in the self-help space in general, which is what we resist persists. And there's different ways of resisting things. But one way that resistance comes in our experience of these different conditions is in telling ourselves that we shouldn't have to deal with them, or that there is something wrong with us for dealing with them, right? So if we're saying, I shouldn't be dealing with depression. I shouldn't feel this way. What's wrong with me? That is a type of resistance. And I'm certainly not telling folks that they need to welcome their depression. I'm just saying to allow it to be there a little bit more, to be like, this is okay, and I'm going to figure it out. That helps you resist it a little bit less, which leads to less intensification of it, right? You're kind of, you stay more in that headspace of being like, okay, what do I do next? How do I figure out how to build my life back? Which gets back into the second part of the question, which is essentially taking stock of your entire life and saying, you know, what are the elements or the aspects of my life that are getting me down? And are there things that I can do in each of those aspects that's going to help me build things back up?
Right. Sorry. As you were speaking about the first part, I was already kind of thinking about the experience that I had. I went on this digital detox retreat for about 10 years. There's a term of it in Hindu called Vipassana. And what this does is you just spend time, well, with like a group of people, but like meditating, and you detach from your phones. And what I learned from that point, when you are letting go of everything that you know, because when you don't have your phone, you don't have contact to your friends, your family, you are completely detached from your work, and you're just alone, quiet for days, it kind of puts you in a space where you just like, some of those things that bothered you, they don't bother you in that moment. That's one thing I discovered. And then the second thing was also just, even when the thoughts come, right? Because you're just alone with your thoughts. So when they come and they are, you know, pestering you, you're feeling somehow, you learn to just observe and then accept. And when you do that, they kind of disappear. And I think it's wonderful how you explained it, because sometimes we tend to say, oh no, I'm not this or this or this. But the more we're trying to fight it, the more it persists.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, what you said was very interesting to me. I often think about the fact that we are probably all addicted. And I don't mean it in like the passive or kind of layperson's kind of way. We are probably literally addicted to our devices from the standpoint of, I would imagine that myself included, most people probably couldn't go more than 24 hours without their phone. And it might be less than that, you know? To the point where you're sitting on the couch and there's a commercial break, what is the very first thing you do, right? You open your device.
Yeah.
Same thing like in meetings, if there's downtime or you're walking from one place to another, you open the phone. And so we do become really trained on that. And that has to change the way that your brain works in probably not the best way.
I agree. I agree with you. So now I love the fact that we've kind of uncovered or spoken about the foundations of how like depression is, and understanding it and looking at it and acknowledging it. So now I want us to talk about the rebuild, you know, like building one brick at a time. What is the first small win someone can create to begin rebuilding when there is zero motivation? Like there is absolutely nothing motivating. I think you can go first, and then I also have something that I can share.
Yeah, sounds great. Love the question, obviously. I would say to play back on the concept of hopelessness and lack of agency, right? If you don't have hope and you don't feel as though you can create change in the world, then what you really have is a lack of evidence that you can do such a thing. And so the antidote to that, if you will, is to take some action in the world, see its effect, hopefully it's positive, and start to stack those small wins on top of each other. So you're really trying to get like an optimism or agency flywheel going, if you will. And if you think about a flywheel, right, people will say in business, right, if you're trying to sell a product, market a product, whatever, selling those first few products is really difficult because nobody knows about you, nobody cares about you. But at some point, you do a lot of marketing, you do a lot of work, and all of a sudden, the thing starts selling itself, or that's the goal at least, right? So take that concept and map it back over to this sense of rebuilding agency in the face of depression in your life. And it's going to be different for everyone, right? I can't say, hey, that the first step is to do this specific thing. But what I can say is for everybody who is listening, right? If you're in that state, you need to take stock of your own life and say, what is the smallest win that I could get today? And I really, really mean that. So if that means you get out of bed today, then that is your small win for the day. If that's something you couldn't do previously. If you haven't taken a shower in a couple days, then you get in the shower, you shower, and that is your small win for the day. Now, obviously,
love that.
Yeah, everybody's going to be on a different wavelength here, or, you know, a different part of the spectrum, if you will, in the sense that, you know, somebody may be a high functioning depressive and maybe they are going to work and they are showing up, but they still feel as though, you know, something is missing in their life and they don't have that agency. And so for them, it might not be getting in the shower. It might be, you know, coming home from work and maybe their depression, we can get into this later, right? But there's different sources of depression and different kinds of depression. Let's just say hypothetically, this person's depression is fed by, you know, lack of inspiration in their job and feeling as though they're in a dead end job, right? So for them, it might mean coming home and taking part in a hobby, right? And saying like, hey, I can go do something that's going to bring me some joy. I can go play a video game for 15 minutes, beat a level in that game. I can go, you know, do some painting or some writing or whatever it is and engage in some activity that brings me a little bit of that joy and shows me that I have some agency, right? I can take different actions outside of the workplace or wherever the depression may be emanating from and generate some of those positive feelings. What you're really trying to do is remind yourself and remind your brain that you are capable of generating those feelings. And then it becomes a matter of stacking those small wins one on top of the other. Eventually, the goal, right, is that the flywheel gets moving fast enough that you are eventually pulled out of that depressive state. It does take time. It takes a lot of work. But that in general is kind of how it goes.
Yeah, I agree with you 110%. And from my end, what I've seen work, I was raised Christian. I don't know if you believe in faith or whatever you believe in. But from my experience, being a Christian, I believe in God. And within believing God, as I grew up, I also discovered these other religions. And then fast forward, I got to spirituality and Kabbalah. And that's kind of where I'm at now. And I still believe everything through Jesus Christ, right? And within that, for me, that is like my point of contact. If I'm down and out and I'm weeping, because sometimes you cry, but you get to a point of weeping, I just pray and then I let it out. And then I just believe that all of this that's happening to me is not, it's kind of, I'm not alone. There's obviously some kind of intelligence and a higher power. And like there's, we can't just be us physical here. There's something, whatever that is watching, you know, God is watching, God is there with me. And from that point, it's almost like a pick me up. And when I sit still in that space, I also just pray and ask for an answer. And as the day goes or as the week goes, those answers or those directions start coming, you know, one by one, one by one. And it's almost like a ladder, you know, like you're climbing, you get the first and or like a step, you get the first step and the second step and the third step. And I think motivation is almost like a muscle. You have to keep working on that belief. And as you keep strengthening it, then it also gets better, you know, by the day.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think one thing I want to add on top of what you said is, right, you have, obviously we have to build agency and stack those small wins through actions that we take. But we also have to have a healthy balance of doing that combined with having faith in something larger than ourselves. And it doesn't necessarily need to be a religion or a God. It could be, it very well may be for a lot of people, but it just has to be something larger than yourself and outside of yourself, right? It could be your community. It could be some group that you're a part of that, you know, you pour your passion into, that you care about. Something that it allows you to take your attention off of yourself and your struggles, and also allows you to essentially find a way to see past the state that you are currently in, right? So the challenge with depression is if you were to just say like, hey, I'm going to get out of this somehow, or you ask yourself, what evidence do I have in front of me to believe that this is going to change, right? Obviously, in this day and age, we live in the age of science and the age of, you know, rationality and all of that. And those are great things. Yeah. But if all you do is sit down and say, okay, like, let me go do some research and figure out how long this depressive battle is going to last. And, you know, what evidence do I have for this thing turning around? you might not find that great of evidence, right? Because if you've been depressed for several months, like, you don't have any. And so what you really need is you need that faith to say, look, I might not have any evidence that this thing is going to turn itself around, but I'm not going to give up yet, right? And I know it sounds a little corny, but like, you do need that kind of thing. Because once you lose the hope entirely, that's a dark, dark place that you go to. And so being able to say to yourself, like, I'm turning my depressive battles, I'm turning my struggles over to God, to the universe, to someone else, to a higher power, whatever, right? And you admit to yourself that this is larger than you and that maybe you don't have 100% control over this thing, you do allow yourself, you know, to cultivate some of that faith and say, hey, maybe something could come along that I can't see right now that could change my state, that could change my frame of mind and get me out of this depressive episode. And again, I want to make sure that I send the message that we want a healthy balance of the two things in terms of taking action to cultivate agency, yet also not losing sight of the hope that things could get better on their own. So having those two things at our disposal, it's a really good baseline or foundation for our mental health. Just being able to say, not only could I change things, but also something could change on its own. And I'm going to wake up each day in hopes that, you know, that comes along and comes my way.
I love that. That is so powerful. Everything you said is everything that I live by. Because it's almost like you peddling that agency plus faith. Like, it's something that you have to have every single day, every single hour, every single minute. Like, once you make a decision that I don't want to feel like this, I want to move forward, it's something that you have to keep in your state of mind and stick by it. That's kind of the difference between people that are actually living the dream or they're successful and doing the things they love doing and it seems like they don't have any problems versus being spiraling and stuck and just it's that peddling of hope and faith and urgency and just doing it over and over and over again, and it raises your vibration, raises your frequency, your energy is almost so magnetic, and you're such an amazing person. So I think what you said, chef's kiss, really, really amazing. We already have these platforms that are fighting for our attention, you know, the screens, the dopamine loops, the overstimulation. What are some of the practical boundaries, right, that you can help someone to protect their mental space? Because every single platform, every single thing is fighting for our attention to obtain mental space. And we are the owners of our mental space. So what are some of the boundaries you can share with us today?
Yeah, and I think the key word there is boundaries, right? Because if you look at somebody who is dominated or controlled by these things, they don't have any boundaries around social media and these different platforms, right? And I don't cast any judgment in saying that. Actually, these platforms, these apps and programs and all that are insanely powerful. And as you said, like, I work in the tech space and, you know, like, I'm not trying to cast too much judgment on them either, right? That it's the same thing as the news, right? Is the news puts out, news stations put out scary headlines because they know that that's what attracts attention. And that attention is what converts into clicks and views and all of that. And that creates money for them. So in the same way, right, like a company that, you know, creates a product, like a technology product, an app, a streaming service, whatever, they need eyeballs as well. And so what they are trying to do is make their product as sticky and addictive as possible, such that when you think to say to yourself, what am I going to do right now? What am I going to do tonight? You think about Netflix, right? Rather than going on Facebook or vice versa. So I do want to say that, like, people should know that these systems are very powerful. And if you find yourself caught in one of them, in the sense of going on Netflix all the time, going on Twitter all the time, like, that's how they're designed. So without those boundaries, we almost don't stand a chance. So let's get into the boundaries, right? The first one is make sure that you do not go to sleep right before using one of these platforms, right? The issue would be that you go on Instagram, you go on Twitter, you go on Facebook, one of these different platforms right before bed, you doom scroll, you see a bunch of scary things, or, you know, you're on Instagram, you get some comparisonitis in the sense that you see all these, you know, people living wonderful lives, and all of a sudden those comparisons flood your mind and you're starting to think to yourself, Why don't I look like that? Why don't I have a life like that? I don't measure up. Why am I not cool? Yada, 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 right? You don't want to go to bed with those kinds of thoughts swirling through your mind. The first is that, you know, that's not a great place to be in general. And, you know, if you go to bed with a bunch of negativity in your mind, you're probably going to have, you know, some bad dreams or not sleep that well, whatever. The second just being that if your mind is worrying and racing right before bed, you're probably not going to fall asleep right away, you know, and that's going to impact your mental health the next day. There's a lot of research out there that shows that like a good night's sleep really can fortify you against anxiety and even a little bit of depression, right? In the sense that you have your prefrontal cortex, your rational thinking brain, and you have your limbic system, the parts of your brain, sort of like the reptilian brain, if you will, the parts of your brain where fight or flight live and all the emotions and that kind of thing. And when we don't sleep very well, the prefrontal cortex, the part of our brain that allows us to wrestle control over the limbic system, it loses that power a little bit, right? So essentially our ability to have executive function, to say to ourselves, like, I'm going to regulate my emotions. I'm going to think rationally. I'm going to decide not to take these actions that might worsen my mental health. Those abilities get degraded the day after we don't sleep very well. So in general, right, we want to make sure that we're getting a good night's sleep. That way we are able to exert control over our limbic system, our reptilian brain. But also, not just that, but also like thinking about that night, right? If we're going to bed and we've got a bunch of blue light in our eyes and we're thinking scary thoughts, we're not going to be able to fall asleep very quickly. And that's going to impact us in that very moment, right? We're going to be sitting up in bed thinking to ourselves, oh, why can't I fall asleep? This is so frustrating. You know, tomorrow's going to be a bad day. And so we want to just try to nip that in the bud as best as we can. So that first boundary would be, you know, give yourself like 30 minutes. At a minimum, give yourself a 30-minute window before you go to bed. Give yourself, like, say to yourself, no phone use. And obviously, like, if you use an alarm clock on your phone or whatever, that's fine. But really try to be careful with that in the sense of don't go doom scrolling at 11 p.m. or whatever time it is that you go to bed. The second one that I would just say is put some boundaries around, like, the apps themselves. So if that means, you know, you need to turn off notifications for certain apps, or you need to throttle some of those notifications, that will make it such that like you're not getting pulled back into those apps as often, right? If you're sitting at work or at your desk or whatever, and you're getting ping, ping, ping from Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, guess what? Those notifications are designed to grab our attention and bring us back into the apps, right? And so find what works for you in the sense that like some people may say, I actually like the notifications because I don't go into the app unless I have a notification, right? Whereas if somebody turns the notifications off, they may say, well, now I'm going into the app more often to see if I have a notification. Figure out what works for you, but at the very least, right? Having those boundaries around those app usage of those apps allows us to use them a little bit more, a little bit less. And then also as a result of using them less, we encounter fewer of those negative side effects on the mental health front. Obviously, there's a lot of studies out there around social media use, how it affects our mental health, comparisonitis, and all of that. Just be mindful of all of this stuff, right? We all know that being on these apps too often can be detrimental to our mental health. And so again, the real through line here is the word boundaries. If you don't have any, you're going to be on these products too often, and it's going to impact your negatively impact your mental health. If you do have some of those boundaries, it's going to allow you to put a little bit of space between the thought that says, hey, open the app, and then the action of actually opening the app. And last thing I'll just say here is, you know, it's funny or a little ironic. You talk to a lot of people who say, I'm certainly not casting any judgment or downplaying anything, but a lot of people report, you know, more ADD, more ADHD in this day and age, more impulsivity. And obviously, there are many folks out there who actually suffer from those conditions. But if you think about the way that the world is built these days, the fact that so many products, so many apps, so many things are competing for our attention, it can often look as though we are all, you know, subject to ADHD and impulsivity, when in reality, the world is built in a way that makes it look like that, right? So when you're online and you're like, hey, I can buy anything I want with a click of a button, it becomes a lot easier to be impulsive than it used to be, right? 30 years ago, if you wanted to buy a new book, you had to get in your car, drive to the bookstore, pay in cash or, you know, not as many people had credit cards back then, there was a lot of friction between you and that goal. Whereas now you can get on an app, you can get on a website, you can click a button and you can give in to those impulses. So really, again, that through line is putting that boundary between you and the impulse and making sure that, you know, we know that it's very easy to just say, hey, like subconsciously open an app, click a button and have that impulse come to life. We want to make sure that there's a little bit of a gap there. Otherwise, those apps are going to have more power and more control than we do over our own thoughts and actions.
There's like new policies that are being set up and, you know, all those structures are new because the internet is also very new. And then all these apps, you know, they're also new. So I'm just like hoping for a future where we get to a point where there is some sort of positive direction towards the future, because this could be to our detriment. You know, it's almost like people are being pulled in different directions and whoever has the most pull wins in that point, and then the next person with the next pull wins the following day, and it's almost like a game, you know.
But it's a little scary.
It is scary. I want to ask you for like 5 exercises or inner dialogues that you can share with us, or maybe like statements that you can, you know, say to help somebody practice. So as they're listening today, this is something that they can say to themselves. So it's almost like an inner dialogue or reframing exercises. So just give us like 5.
So a clarifying question would be, what is the subject or the goal of these practices? Are we trying to deal with depression? Are we trying to find some motivation? Are we trying to have a little bit less impulsivity? Where do you want to take these kinds of
to deal with depression
statements?
Deal with depression.
Sure. So I think I always come back to the fact that like all of these things are a bit personal, right? So somebody is probably going to have to think about their own life and see essentially where they are and find a statement that impacts their own specific situation. At the same time, right, thinking about depression broadly and what kind of condition it is and how it affects you, I think the first one that I would say is like, you know, something to the tune of like feeling as though things are going to improve or things are going to get better, right? Because again, when we're dealing with depression, we're dealing with that lack of hope and that lack of agency. And so some sort of mantra to ourselves to say like, I don't know where it's going to come from. I don't know how it's going to happen, but something good is going to come my way today, right? That is a nice little mantra that we can say to ourselves to, one, hopefully put our eyes on that good thing coming our way, but also get a little bit of that emotion going and feeling as though that thing, it's heading our way. And so we can get a little bit excited about that. So that would definitely be one that I would say to myself or that I would use. Trying to think of a few others, right?
I can share one.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So mine is, thank you, God. Thank you, Creator. You created everything. You created me. And I just want to be happy. That's
I like
it.
That. Nice.
Yeah. Like, I just want to be happy. Like, I just want to be happy. So take care of everything.
And that's cool.
Kind of lifts my mood, because it's almost like I have no control over externally what's happening. And I hand it over to God to take care of it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple, you know, just a couple other quick ones that I say to myself, you know, these are broader than just depression itself, but there are times where like I'm not in a good frame of mind. I'm not in the right state, you know? And so I will say to myself, like on that resistance piece that we talked about earlier of trying not to resist the experience so much, it will often sound a little weird, but, or hard to implement at times, but I think of it like, you know, going to the gym and like, let's say you go in a cold plunge, right? Most people, and cold plunging is getting more popular these days, right? Most people like the idea of the cold plunge, yet very few people actually like being in the cold water. And yet we still want to make sure that we do that thing because we know there's some benefit to it, right? And we know we're at least going to feel good on the other side. And maybe there's a physical aspect to it that like improves circulation and helps blood flow and all that stuff, right? So rather than thinking about getting in the cold plunge all day and saying to ourselves, this is going to be so miserable. Oh my goodness. Like, I don't know if I want to do this. When I go to the gym and there is a cold plunge there, which I'm very fortunate that that's at my gym. It's awesome. Yada, yada. Same thing. Instead of resisting that experience, I just say, okay, it's going to be 2 minutes. Let's get in the cold plunge and let's get it over with. Right. And so on the mental health front, when I'm, you know, not feeling my best, not feeling like myself, obviously we don't have that stopwatch component of being like, I'm going through anxiety and the anxiety is going to be 2 minutes long or the depression is going to be 2 minutes long. But still, right, I think it's helpful to say to ourselves, look, I'm feeling something. I'm not resisting it. Let's get this thing over with, right? Rather than fighting it off, we say to ourselves, I'm giving this over to somebody else, to a higher power. I'm not resisting it. Let's just let it happen. We allow the chance, at least, for that thing to move through us more quickly. And so again, that mantra, that phrase that you might be able to say to yourself or you could consider to say to yourself would be to just give it up and say, let's get this thing over with. Second one would be just like, you know, people sometimes talk about the concept of like, you know, and this is a little bit more on the anxiety front, but I do think, you know, it could maybe apply to depression as well, as people will often talk about like anxiety being a little bit of a wave, right? In the sense of it's a little scary, but also like you could interpret it from the standpoint of it being a little bit thrilling, where there's a lot of, you know, energy coursing through your veins and whatnot. And if you're going to go, let's say you're in high school or college and you have a basketball game or a track meet or you're going to give a public speech. Yes, that thing is scary, but it's also like there's a really small piece there that's a little exciting, right? And so you think about that event or that experience being like a wave and you say to yourself, okay, here we go. Let's ride this wave, right? I'm going to go up. I'm going to go down. I'm going to go back up. And yes, I could fall at any moment and that would be very scary. But at the same time, I could ride that wave. I could go through the pipeline and that would be a little exhilarating. So trying to convert that, you know, that nervous energy or even maybe a little bit of depressive energy into something that is more useful and in saying that to ourselves.
Yeah. So you've said three. I said one. Let me just say the last one. So the last one I use also is trust the process. I think trust the process, it will be in a space where maybe there's like a lot of doubt and a lot of like uncertainty. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. But then the moment I say to myself, trust the process, and I feel it, that I am trusting the process, whether things are going downhill, whether things are terrible and they're so bad, I trust the process. Because I know what I want the outcome to be. So if it means the process is going to be bad, if it means the process is going to be something that I don't like, I'm trusting that because it's part of the process. So, yeah.
That's great. And that's like it feeds back into the non-resistance piece, right? As you have this understanding that you can open up to it, you can say that it's okay. And even if it takes you to a place that you don't necessarily want to go, you feel as though in the end, everything's going to end up okay.
Yeah, I love that. So we've come to the end of our discussion. Thank you so much for joining me. There is this one thing that I do with all the guests before they leave. I always ask you to tell us something that only you know, that nobody else know, that you're saying here for the very first time.
Do I know anything that nobody else knows?
It could be maybe you were just taking a walk and you had like a spaceship sighting or something. Just being
man, I think you have stumped me. Helpful. Again, it's not something that only I know, but it is November at the time of this recording, daylight savings time. Either I don't remember if it just ended or just started, but we went into that part of the year in the Northern Hemisphere where, you know, the sun sets earlier. And so a lot of people end up experiencing seasonal affective disorder during this time of the year. So for folks who are listening and struggle with this kind of thing, especially because SAD is a form of, you know, it's a depressive disorder, I want to make sure that folks get the message that this is an important time of the year to get outside early, prioritize daytime sunlight, and prioritize activities that are fun for them, right? It could be a difficult time of the year. You might experience more of that sadness, more of that seasonal depression, if you will. Some of that really does have to do with the fact that we are getting less sunlight into our eyes. And so just make sure, you know, whether it means get up and go for a walk for 10 minutes every morning, whatever, understand that like if you're going to a job 9 to 5 every day, by the time that you leave the office, the sun will be down. And so if you have to set a boundary, put a 15-minute block on your calendar, 20-minute block on your calendar that is reserved for you going outside and getting some daytime sunlight. It's going to help you with your mood and your seasonal affective disorder. And again, it's just a really important time of the year because not only is there less sunlight, but it's cold and it's dark and there's fewer fun things to do. So we need to prioritize our mood during this season more than any other one.
I love this. Can you also just mention the location of exactly where you are in the world right now?
Yep. I'm in Boston, Mass, which is in the U.S. And it gets dark here early. So
awesome. I love your sharing. That is so beautiful. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
Okay. So if today's conversation resonated with you, go and check Brian's work at getoutofyourhead.com. And remember to rebuild your life. And it doesn't just start with the perfect plan. It starts with a decision to show up for yourself. Brian, before you go, tell us where people can find you on social media.
Yeah, on Instagram, that's kind of the platform I'm most active on at the moment. The handle is Get Out of Your Head.
Awesome. I love that. Thank you so much for tuning in. Remember to like and share and follow the show. Follow Brian. Let's interact. Let's add some comments. If there's anything that you've learned that is new, tell us. If also there's any additions, tell us. And you can share this with your friends or family or someone that you know that's currently facing depression. So thanks once again. And it was nice having you.
Thanks, Gina. It was a great combo.
Awesome.